If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust, Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit endurancewarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's endurancewarranty.com.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
And we're coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, Instagram shortly, as soon as I remember to do that. And also, for the first time ever, you're going to love this one, Justin, LinkedIn.
Yes, it's finally. Hello, future employers. Welcome to Comic Book Club. Let's network. Let's link. We lost Kick and we got LinkedIn. This is good.
Yeah, it's all working out. The Kick bump has made way for the LinkedIn bump, so I'm very excited about that. If you're listening later, that is cool too. Wherever you're listening on your podcast platforms, thank you for tuning
in. We're live on the fridges and Airbnbs in central Connecticut. We're live on toothpaste tubes in the southern tier, so please enjoy.
And let me just say, Taxi TV, hello.
Oh, I'm what's up? I'm Sandy
Kenyon. Do they
still
do that?
I think, yes, they definitely do some okay. version of it. I don't know if Sandy Kenyon is on there living and dying by the movie reviews. But
he's living off of those residuals at this point.
Residual. My dream is to book a Taxi TV commercial and have a show on gas station TV. So I'm hitting everybody coming and going.
You're like, well, I'm finally dead with that guy. Oh, there he is again. Well, anyway, I will just mention, if you would like ad-free versions of this podcast and all the podcasts we do, other than the ads for Sandy Kenyon that we run no matter what, you can check it out at patreon.com/comicbookclub. We got a great show for you this evening, folks. We have an awesome guest. I'm very excited to have her on to talk about, among other things, IDW Star Trek books, IDW Dark books, and all the other amazing things she's working on. Ladies and gentlemen, Heather Antos. Heather, welcome.
Hey.
Hi. Hello.
Hi. So excited to have you on. So excited to talk about all this. We have been incessantly talking about the Star Trek books in particular. We love them. You just finished up a big crossover with Lore War leading into Star Trek Omega that we'll talk about in a moment. And there are a bunch of other books that are either currently running or coming up. One of them is a book called Star Trek Red Shirts, and I did want to mention every week on the show, we have a professional chef down in New Orleans named Brett Macris. He works at an amazing restaurant called Shift. If you're ever down in New Orleans, check it out. And he either creates or curates a cocktail for our guests. And this week, he created a Red Shirts cocktail. The Red Shirts, which is bourbon, Aperol,
Orgeat.
I never know how to pronounce that. Lemon juice, Peychaud's.
Good.
I should practice this stuff beforehand. And lemon peel. And hopefully it won't kill you, but it will give you enough fuel to go on your next mission, I would say. So yeah, there you go. Red Shirts cocktail in honor of
Die lightly intoxicated, I say. Especially in a Star Trek vessel.
Why not with a buzz, right? Go out with a buzz.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Well, let's talk. I want to take a big step back, because something that we talk about in almost every review where we're talking about a Star Trek book is it really feels like this era that you've ever seen, Star Trek, Star Trek Defiant, leading into Lore War, has really kind of cracked the code of how to make Star Trek work in comics. And at least part of that, that we've intuited, feels like, not to call out other things, but Justin in particular, you've definitely been like, do you want to...
No, go.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, like, Star Trek, when it first popped up, we were like, oh, this is like Avengers or Justice League, but for Star Trek, getting all the big ones together. And then Defiant is kind of like the Sharps. It's sort of like the X-Force, but to their Avengers or Justice League, which obviously is like not exactly analogous. But what was the starting point there for you? Yeah. What did you want to do with the Star Trek line, and what was kind of the inspiration?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically kind of it. When I originally pitched this line, and when I first called up Jackson Lanzik and Colin Kelly, I asked them, what does the Avengers of Star Trek look like?
That's awesome.
What does a book that's just called Star Trek look like? Because, you know, nothing against the previous runs of Star Trek before I took over, but they all felt very insular. They all felt very, you know, you have to have watched every episode, or you have to be tuned into a very specific, you know, one specific series. Everything is a lost episode of Next Gen or a lost episode of Voyager or something of that nature. And I wanted to create a Star Trek comics line that's for comics fans, that speaks and in conversation within the universe in a way that comics fans understand. And that's where this was born. I wanted to eventize Star Trek and create a story that could only exist in the comics.
Yeah. I mean, it translated so hard to that. Truly, the first issue, I was like, oh, yeah, I can't believe they're doing this. This must be... I felt like there was going to be some continuity thing that scooped it all up. But I was like, the confidence to just go with the most fun version, the sort of ultimate or absolute Star Trek, where it's like, let's just boil down all the like fan favorites and fun stuff and put them in increasingly exciting situations, and then have an internal continuity that felt like the joy you get when you're deep in a season of, you know, name your favorite Star Trek series. So that feels like, was that always the intention, to sort of build a new continuity from the beginning there?
You know, one of my biggest lessons I got to learn when I first started my career in launching the Star Wars line, the other Star franchise.
How dare you do both?
I know. But it was getting to fill in the gaps, right? Mm-hmm. Getting to find the pockets where, you know, there were questions that got answered in later films, but were never answered on screen. So like, for instance, my first year working on Star Wars and Darth Vader, we got to tell how Darth Vader found out Luke Skywalker was his son. You know, that's something that he didn't know in A New Hope, but he learned, you know, he knew by the time Empire Strikes Back came around. And so that's sort of, you know, the stuff that we got to do within Star Trek and within Defiant. You know, Deep Space Nine ended, Voyager ended. There's a couple of years before Nemesis happens. But then now, right, or a couple of years ago, the Picard TV show was coming out, right? And we get to see all of these characters 20 years later, but very changed, very different. How did they get there, right? How did Ro Loren end up in prison or get out of prison? How did Worf become this pacifist? You know, was Jake staring in the window at Deep Space Nine for the rest of all time? So yeah, it's stuff like that was really cool to get to play with.
Yeah. And this led up, like I mentioned before, to the Lore War crossover, which, not to keep doing analogs, but I kept calling out that it felt like Age of Apocalypse, but with Star Trek to me. I think you called out House of M is sort of what you were looking at a little bit. So why, this is jumping ahead to the end of it a little bit, but like, why was this the right place to end this stage of the Star Trek books?
I mean, Nemesis was coming upon us, you know, like that is the one thing when you're playing in these universes that span decades within their own time, right, is you do have bookends. You do eventually have to put the toys in the box for the next TV show or the next film or the next, you know, whatever to begin. And when we first pitched this line, it was originally conceived, you know, we'd do Star Trek and Defiant, and then we'd go to Day of Blood and see what happens, right? Because, you know, in this day and age, you're lucky if you get an issue 6 in anything, let alone 3 years of a comic run and 2 crossovers, couple tie-in one-shots, and all the crazy stuff that we got to do. And so we did Day of Blood, and it went really well. And then I asked the guys, I was like, cool, what's our next crossover? How do we get there? I want to do this again. And basically, after Day of Blood, we pitched the end of the line. We literally went, and here's what the next, you know, year and a half of the comics are until we've told the story. We've done what we needed to do. Sisko learned his lesson. The prophets learned theirs. You know, Worf has made amends with his son, and we can put all the toys back in the box. And, you know, we didn't want to overstay our welcome, and we wanted to be able to end things on our terms, which we were very fortunate to be able to do.
I do want to ask you about a specific structural thing in Lore War that I was curious about, and again, really enjoyed it across the board. I'm sorry, I'm forgetting whether it was four issues or five issues.
Five
issues. And then there was the Omega issue at the end, but spoilers for anybody who hasn't checked it out, there's this crazy cliffhanger where we find out that Scotty is being used to power Lore's like alternate universe, and his brain has been separated from his head, and is gross and wild. And the
Scotty.
Others. We find out it's and others, and then there's a big like heist set up where it's okay, we gotta split into teams to get all these peoples, and I was like, this is awesome. And then it was distilled down to one page, which was a really cool page. But my initial reaction was like, oh, I wanna read one shots about each of these individual things. Was that any part of the discussion, or does that come down to like amount of page space to tell the story, or how do you hit something like that?
It comes down to amount of page space, really. Yeah. You know, when we set out to do an event like a Day of Blood or like a Lore War, you know, we have a writer's retreat. I get all of us in a room for a couple days to break it all down. And we literally whiteboard it out. We have day one is usually, where are all of our characters? What is their role in all of this? And once we figure out the rules and the pairings and, you know, whatever, then we beat by beat every single issue. And on the board, we have the Alpha, we have Star Trek 31, Defiant 26, you know, Star Trek 32, Defiant 27. And we have like, this needs to happen in this issue, this needs to happen in this issue. And it's just kind of like filling in the blanks of page space of, you know, and looking at it all and, is this too much? Is this too much to fit in one issue? You know, do we need to shift things around? And then it's up to the guys to divvy up and figure out who's writing what. That's not on me.
Oh, that's nice. At that point, which I guess I would argue is probably the craziest point of the whole event / run on all of these books, how do you keep it Star Trek? When like, there's so much cross-genre stuff, like you were saying, like there's a heist element here. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of body horror. There's just expansive outside of Star Trek sci-fi stuff happening here. What keeps it back, the thread back to the original idea of what makes Star Trek different?
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, Star Trek is talking in rooms about feelings. Like that's what it is, right? And it's not about the pew pew. It's not about the action. As much fun as all of that is, and we all enjoy it, especially in comic book form, it really is people sitting in rooms talking about feelings, and you know what can be better and how we can fix things and all of that. And it's really philosophy. There's a philosophical lesson that happens in the through line of everything, you know? And our thesis and kind of everything from Star Trek #1 all the way to Lore War is, you know, the difference and separation between humanity and gods. Right. You know, we saw that even Lore's, as much as he wanted to be a god, he still there was too much human in him, even in his androidness at the end of the day.
It's great.
So still talking from the editorial perspective, once you know this is going to end and you're going to hit the end of this run, obviously you're still working with some of these creators, but just to list the stuff that's coming up, like we mentioned, you currently have Red Shirts running coming up. There's Last Starship, Voyager Homecoming, and a Strange New Worlds series as well. So what is your job as editor? Like, you obviously got to get, not to distill it down to this, but like, you got to get the product out there. So knowing these stories are going to be end, what's your next step?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you build out the pub plan, right? And some of it is just simple things. So if there's a new Strange New World show coming out, let's get it.
We should have a comic like that,
right? Yeah. You know, Lower Decks was a really popular show. Let's keep telling stories in the comics. Then for me, it's a lot of what toys are we not playing with? What toys have we played with too much? You know, what needs to be put off the table for a little bit to make people want them more.
And sorry to interrupt you there, but are you clocking reader? Because I feel like especially something as big as the run you just finished, people are like, hey, can I see this thing I like? And you're like, yeah. That's not in the plan. So are you like really trying to bake all of that in?
Sometimes, yeah. I mean, there's certain things that like, you know, that is beyond my control, right? There are certain toys that are just off the table, no matter how good of a story I want to tell, you know, with them or what pitch I have, you know, some actor might not let us use their likeness. So that character is just completely off.
It's
the
Will
table.
Wheaton, isn't it?
It's not Will Wheaton.
No.
Will wrote a story about character in Star Trek 400. So not Will Wheaton. He's very great. He was great to work with. But, you know, it's things like that. And then, you know, for me, I like to play with genre and see, you know, what haven't we done? You know, like the upcoming Strange New Worlds is a Lovecraftian deep sea space horror, you know, which that's just super fun. And we haven't got to do in Star Trek comics before. So really trying to push and play and experiment. And, you know, that's how we got things like Warp Your Own Way, right? The 200-page interactive graphic novel. And it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah. Go ahead, Justin.
Is there an urge to build up the next big machine? And how would you make it different, I guess?
By machine, do you mean
the
like...
next big event or next big, like you said, what are the Avengers of the Star Trek universe?
Who's to say I haven't already?
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm curious about.
Well, I guess we'll just have to wait.
Let's talk about something that hopefully you can talk about that I'm really curious about is The Last Starship. So for anybody who doesn't know the concept of that, and correct me if I get any of this wrong, but it takes place during the Burn, which is an event that happened. I'm going to get the season wrong, but I think it's Star Trek Discovery Season 3 when they jump to the future. And they're past it. All the warp drives, for the most part, have been destroyed and don't work anymore. We never really get to see that event. This is taking place during that, which I feel like would be enough for an unexplored period of Star Trek. But the added bonus is Captain Kirk has somehow been resurrected and is leading a crew during the Burn. What was the pitch like this for this?
Yeah, I really wanted, you know, it's with so much happening with all of the actors and the characters in the shows, there's a lot of times there's stuff where it's just, we can't tell stories with these characters, or this time period is off limits, or, you know, as I said before, we've played in this time period too much. So I really wanted to break out into the wild west of Star Trek and find a pocket of space, no pun intended, that hasn't really been explored. And, you know, Jackson and Colin, I think it was when we were doing the writer's retreat for Day of Blood, actually, I think this is when this first came up, and they just said, what if we did a story during the Burn? You know, you get like, I think 0.3 seconds of a blip in Discovery, right? Where you see everything blow up, and that's kind of it. That all we get, we know like trillions of people died. It really messed up the Federation, and then Discovery came along and fixed it. And so that's a pretty big deal, right? That's like when, you know, Order 66 goes down and all the Jedi are killed, not to compare it again to the, you know, the other Star Trek franchise, but it is the end of an era. It is a pretty big deal, to have this Federation, you know, suddenly not there anymore. And, you know, it was a big swing to go to Paramount and be like, hey, can we like do this? Can we
play in this little area, this little mess?
Can we define it? You know, can we define what happened in this time period? Oh, also, can we bring back the most famous captain of all time in order to do it? And it did take about a year of conversations to get the pitch approved and all the right people to sign off on it. You know, we had to work pretty closely with Secret Hideout, because the upcoming Strange or what is it, Starfleet Academy show mm-hmm. takes place post Burn. And so we had to make sure that we're playing in accordance with all the things that they're discussing wow. within that show. Will Shatner at a con made a comment that almost negated this entire series.
Whoa.
So that was a whole fun
thing. What did he say, if you don't mind me asking?
I can't remember what show it was. I think this happened in November or something, but he was at a convention and he said, oh yeah, he might be coming back to the screen. And Twitch put everyone in a tizzy to be like, is this real? How real is this? What is happening? He's 93. Is he doing
I was going to say.
And so we had to wait to see how real this was. It's really exciting. I can't wait for folks to see how we bring back Shatner and what his role in all of this is. Because it is a pretty big deal for him to come back and see, you know, the Empire, and the holistic civilization that he stood for, he helped mm-hmm. build, you know, crumble. What does that do to a person, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any personal sort of unexplored pockets, like the Burn? What are the ones that you're trying to like inject into the comic book space?
Yeah. You know, I really want to do something very unexplored. You know, a Star Trek has spent the last 60 years in these four quadrants. What's past that? You know, like, space is vast, space is infinite. And yes, we're all about exploring strange new worlds where there's four more quadrants beyond the four that we're in, right? You know, what's out there?
Awesome. Yeah. Well, let's turn it from the Star Trek line to talk about another line you manage, which is the IDW Dark line. And this is a new horror-focused line. We've got some awesome properties coming back. There's Beneath the Trees, Where Nobody Sees, Rite of Spring, which comes out tomorrow mm-hmm. and is great.
Yes.
And then there's going to be a new 30 Days of Night series. But you also have a bunch of movie and TV properties that are in the mix there as well. What's the overall MO for the line? Like, what's the mission statement for the line?
Boo.
Boo.
Oh, you sort of got me.
I know,
oh,
right? Geez. Right? Yeah.
Terrifying.
Very scary. Yeah, I mean, it's horror is the home of IDW. You know, like we got our start with horror 30 or 25 years ago, and we're just going back home with it. And you know, getting to play back in the world of 30 Days a Night, you know, Rodney Barr and Chris Shahan are doing just incredible, incredible work on the series. Just beautiful, beautiful work going back to Barrow, Alaska. I mean, Patrick Horvath was the breakout last year with Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees. And so folks are not ready for what Samantha is up to in this second series. And then, yeah, we already have a wonderful partnership with Paramount on the Star Trek line, as well as our Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles line. And so when we started talking to them about horror properties, they were really excited to partner with us on some of their biggest properties, one of which is Event Horizon, you know, this cult classic horror film that there has been no additional stories since the original film in 97. Mm-hmm. We are the first people to get to play back in that field, and it's so exciting.
I remember seeing that movie when it came out, and that movie had no business being as scary as it was. It really, talk about being surprised. I was like, this is just like some fun space stuff, and it was truly demonic. It was horrifying.
When I saw it the first time, I think I was in college, and like my friend was just like, oh, you like Star Wars? This is a space movie, and just like put it on, and I was rudely awakened. Yes.
So you have a couple of different properties that you're hitting in different ways. Event Horizon, like you said, has nothing really at all has been done with it in a couple of decades at this point, and you're doing a prequel, and it's great. Christian Ward, awesome. Twilight Zone, obviously there's been a lot of different Twilight Zones, so it makes sense to play in that anthology space. I am really curious about something like Smile is also on the list. That's something that, to the point you were making earlier about people feeling protective about stuff, there's been two Smile movies, and that's it at this point. So What's different about tackling something like that versus Twilight Zone or Event Horizon?
Yeah, I mean, we're really getting to do something new, right? Again, with something like Smile, we're the first people that get to do something that's not on the screen. But the difference with something like Smile and A Quiet Place is that these are still Hollywood projects that are still ongoing, that are still developing. They're doing, you know, A Quiet Place has had three very, very successful films. I can't imagine that they're not going to do more. Yeah. Same with Smile. And so these, you know, we're working very closely with the directors and creators of these films. We're, you know, we're working, you know, with Troy Parker on Smile, and he's very hands-on with everything about, you know, how the entity works, like how it passes on from one to another, you know, different rules we can play with and break, you know, the different eras that we're allowed to explore. Because that's one of the beautiful things about these properties, right, is Smile, because it's an entity that gets passed on from one person to the next, we have a very wide playing field of location, of era. You know, this particular book, we haven't announced the creative team or concept yet, but I truly cannot wait for folks to see what we're doing. I think it's going to take a lot of people by surprise. It's very unlike anything they've done in the universe thus far. And same thing with A Quiet Place, right? What Krasinski and the other creatives on A Quiet Place have done is they've made this really beautiful anthology series that pockets different corners of the world, and every single film is extremely different. You know, one is a true like horror, one is a family drama, like one is more of an adventure story, but you know, all kind of dark and scary with the monsters at the end of the day. So, you know, getting to take that and see how we can put it in a different pocket of America and play with genre and play with theme has been really cool.
I feel like with licensed properties in the past, you didn't have as much contribution from like the director or writer for the bigger mm-hmm. movie project. What's the workflow like when you have different that creative level, and then your writers and artists on the comic itself and your role? Like how does all that shift?
Yeah, I mean, I'm in constant communication with the studio partners on everything that I work with, you know, and that's the same on things for like Sonic or, you know, TMNT or anything like that. You know, everything we do goes through the licensor, goes through the studio. So, you know, for instance, on like Smile, you know, I cast a creative team. I work with the creative team there. We get the pitches. It goes to the studio. My representatives there will say, yes, this isn't good enough shape to send to the director, or we don't think he's going to respond too well to this. Can you change X, Y, and Z before, you know, before we elevate it to them? Yeah. And so, you know, once you get an initial, every project's different. Every director wants more or less hands in the pot, right, so to speak. But once you get an initial like high concept approved, then at that point, they only want to stay updated. They're usually not like very involved on the day to day because they're busy making $1 billion movies.
Something else. Yeah.
Well, the other thing, I thought this was what you were going to ask about, Justin, when you started, but I feel like we're in a very different world with adaptations where they're not necessarily these like quickie, cheapy check-in, cash-in type things. And particularly with this line, I imagine, just based on the couple of things that I've seen so far, it has to be a little more art forward. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not that it has to be, but it's, we want these to be taken seriously at comics, right? Yeah. There was a period, definitely, I think, where quote unquote licensed comics were seen as just product, as just a cash grab, as just, you know, whatever. But, you know, our Event Horizon comic is just as legitimate as our Beneath the Trees comic is. You know, it's right, just as scary. Probably a little more scary, honestly.
God, stop saying that to me. Now I'm definitely reading it.
Well, let me ask you a follow-up then, and this is a general one, but now that you're editing this whole horror line, obviously every title is different, but as an editor, what are you looking for? Like, what are the essentials that you need in a good horror script?
Yeah, I mean, it needs to be grounded in a very real human anxiety. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, in Event Horizon, we're exploring the doctor's inability to save his wife, right? And the regret and dread that haunts him because of that. You know, that's a very real, relatable thing that regardless of us entering demonic hell realms, you know, we can relate to that very real fear and dread of dread that we've all experienced in some way, shape or form. Right. And so that's kind of the big thing is all of these stories are grounded in very real human experience, very real human anxiety in these very heightened and surreal environments.
Other than that stuff, you are doing one other thing we should probably talk about, which you're already doing a lot, but also over at Image, you are editing Bug Wars, one of our favorite currently running titles. We had Jason Aaron and Mahmoud Azrar on the show a couple of months ago now, but we're heading towards the end of the first arc of this book. It has been wild. It's been crazy. What is it like for you, though, editing this on the side while you already have all clearly all of these responsibilities over at IDW?
I mean, this is recess for me. This is the fun part. Like, this is the fun, you know, just getting to play with some of my extremely talented friends, you know, doing a story that they're extremely passionate about, you know. Conan means Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, right?
And, yeah.
Pretty great. And, you know, Jason and I go way, way back to Star Wars, you know, Mahmoud and I did some X-Men stuff together at Marvel and, you know, getting to play with these just brilliant creative geniuses along with Matt Wilson, Becca Carey and all the wonderful cover artists. It's just unleashing like this artistic genius. And I'm just there getting the first view of everything.
Fan first on that one.
Exactly.
One of the things that Jason talked about, he was clearly very excited about this book. And he was so hyped. He was talking about all of the backstory stuff that he came up with that has been popping up in the back of the issues. What's it like to read through that? Because that's, I think, like a little bit of a different editing skill probably than editing the comics proper.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm going to be really honest. Jason Aaron is
You don't read them.
I do read them, but
no,
like,
I know. I'm kidding.
I'm like, add a comma here. This is spelled wrong. Like, Jason is such a good writer that, you know, my editorial notes are usually just like, oh, remember, like, you know, this is a continuity thing, blah, 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 blah. Let's not contradict ourselves. But, you know, reading his description of Slade punching through this bug mite and the different colored blood, there's a lot of discussion about what color blood guts the different
bugs are weird.
Have to,
definitely.
Yeah, there's we have a whole chart of insects and blood gut colors.
Oh, put that in the back matter. That's a win right there.
But you know, it really just is a joy. It's like reading poetry, you know, and Jason, you're absolutely right. Like Jason and Mahmoud could not be more excited about this book and it shows in everything that they turn in because it's just great.
It is funny you say poetry because it does read like a Homeric, like Odyssey type thing. It's really, really true.
It's epic. It really feels epic.
Mm-hmm. This is obviously a lot of stuff, but before we start to wrap up here, is there anything else you want to plug that people should be checking out?
The other really big thing that's coming out this summer is the trade of Exorcism at 1600 Pen.
So
that book was great.
We love that.
Thank you
book.
So much. Thank you. Thank you.
We talked it up.
That was another series that I edited end of last year into the beginning of this year. So the collected edition comes out this August from Hannah Rose May and Vanessa Del Rey and Jordi Belair. So really, really proud of that book. So definitely pick that up as well.
We got a question here from the comments. I don't know exactly what this means. Maybe you do. Michael Tillman says, when is the Ha Penguin comic coming out?
I know exactly what that is. So HA exclamation point is my signature and my logo that I use.
Oh, okay.
So it's my initials, HA. And I love penguins and I draw penguins, little things with penguins. So, you know, whenever a billionaire invests in my personal comic publisher and I can draw that comic is when that will
happen. There it is.
Excellent. If there are any billionaires in the chat that
want to
invest.
We have a huge billionaire audience.
I figured. Yeah. Comics really seems to.
Yeah. It draws all the money. Absolutely. Heather, congratulations on everything. All of this is awesome. Looking forward to whatever is next for Star Trek and IDW Dark and everything else. And congratulations.
Thank you guys so much. This was so much fun.
Yeah.
Pleasure talking to you.
Have a good night.
Take care.
Bye. All right, there we go. Just to plug all of this stuff again, or at least as much as I can remember, check out the upcoming Star Trek books, including The Last Starship, Voyager Homecoming, the new Strange New Worlds comic, Red Shirts is ongoing, as well as Lower Decks. Also, the IDW Dark line, if you listen to our Stack podcast, little spoiler, but you can hear our review of Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees, Rite of Spring, number one tomorrow. Bug Wars, great stuff as well. And there you go. Check all that out.
What if everything you've been taught about happiness is wrong? We chase careers, approval, more stuff, hoping it'll finally make us feel fulfilled, but it never sticks. What if happiness isn't out there, but already inside you, just waiting to be unlocked? Discover the book, The Happiness Experiment. Every person has a unique happiness type, and when you understand yours, everything shifts. You'll stop chasing and start creating joy on your own terms. Discover your happiness type with a free happiness type assessment. Go to myhappinesstype.com. That's myhappinesstype.com. It takes just a minute and it might change your life. Then grab your copy of The Happiness Experiment at Books A Million. This isn't just a book, it's a practical framework, a journey inward. It's a tool to help you reconnect with the happiness that's been waiting inside you all along. Pick up The Happiness Experiment and start your happiness experiment today.
Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
This is an announcement to all United States vehicle owners who own a 2003 or newer vehicle with a manufacturer's warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all. With a struggling economy and the cost of living on the rise, Endurance is now offering an affordable, low-cost vehicle coverage plan to the general public. As of today, you could be one of millions of drivers that now may qualify to have your vehicle protected under this coverage and have all future covered auto repairs paid directly to the repair shop for you. You pick your plan, you pick your deductible, you even pick the repair shop. Roadside service, towing, and rental coverage is included. To all United States vehicle owners who own a 2003 or newer vehicle with a manufacturer's warranty about to expire, get your vehicle protected now and save your wallet from costly vehicle repairs. For your free 5-minute quote and to see if you qualify, visit endurancewarranty.com. Endurancewarranty.com.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because we know in making the most of your home, DIY doesn't just stand for do it yourself. It also means dream it yourself. And we're here to help protect the dreams you're building. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.
So much great stuff.
And even more great stuff on the show, because we're going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section, because you all make it up. It is your audience questions.
Yeah.
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments over on Facebook, YouTube, Twitch, maybe LinkedIn. I honestly don't know.
How does that work? Drop your resume to us on LinkedIn. We'll let you know. We have a third chair we're opening up tonight and beyond.
Yeah. Just to actually answer that question, Pete is just away this week. Is he home? Is that what's going on?
He is in Rochester, I believe. So if you're out there, he, again, hasn't given us a direct address. So we just know he's in the heart of, just west of the heart of Central New York.
Yes. Central New York, bordering, I believe, Texas and North Dakota, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You've never seen a map further west from Long Island.
It's just a big jumble. I take the puzzle pieces, throw them in the air.
Here there be dragons, says Alex's map.
I'm going to work backwards a little bit here. Schreckler says, Alex, what happened to your little park thing? Did it get it canceled?
Your little park thing? Oh, did you have a picnic? Did you have a little park thing?
Yes, I did.
You need little juices and little hot dogs, little tiki wieners?
He is referring to the talks that I do in Bryant Park every summer.
You saying that sounds like you're like lecturing kids to stop throwing their frisbees so hard.
It's kind of what it feels like sometimes, let's be honest. There was one that got rained out, but we did a second one that was about two Archie comics, and I'm actually... they sent me a recording of that. So normally it's a conversation. Very weirdly, this is more like me giving a TED talk about the history of Archie, which is not cool. Normally what this stuff is like. But that recording is going to go up in the Comic Book Club feed. If I remember, I think I queued it up for next Monday. That will go up. So
great.
There you go.
Bonus.
So people can listen to me talk about Archie comics for half an hour. Stanley says, are you excited or nervous to see the Superbad movie?
Here we go. Let me answer first, Alex.
Yeah, please.
I remain pure excited. I have avoided some of the later trailers. I'm not usually too concerned with spoilers, but I just feel overexposed on the movie in general. So I want to just go in as naked as I can possibly be at this stage in my life.
And I saw it earlier today at a screening. Bastard. I'm sorry, I did.
No, I love it. I'm happy for you.
Tell you what, obviously I'm not going to spoil anything, but I will give, if anybody wants to tune out now, the broadest of thoughts. I'll also mention that as we're taping this, people are seeing the advanced prime screening. So a lot more people in about an hour and a half are going to come out and be like, here's what I thought of the movie.
Yeah.
Generally, I'm positive on it. I think...
Great.
I like Dave Cornsweet as Superman and Clark Kent. He's really good. Rachel Brosnahan, great as Lois Lane. Nicholas Holt, great as Lex Luthor. They're a good trio, even though I don't think they really ever interact as a trio at any point. But the best part of the movie, hands down for me, the chemistry between David Cornsweet and Rachel Brosnahan is great. They're great. That's Lois awesome. And Clark. Absolutely, I think the best parts of the movie are when it's just... the two of them having a conversation. You saw a little bit of the interview scene in some of the trailers. There's a lot more of that. Those scenes are absolute electric fire. Love them.
That's awesome. And you're tough on your Superman actors, I feel like.
I mean, I definitely have specific thoughts about them. I'm also, it made me realize coming out of the theater, I was like, I am a sucker for Superman and Lois. Like, they're definitely like, when they're done right, they're just great couple, and they've mostly been done right is the weird part, but they're very good. The issue with the movie is it's very busy and it's very plot heavy. There are, in 2 hours and 10 minutes including credits, there's a lot of stuff going on at all times. I don't know if this is true or not, but I had heard at early test screenings they had it separated with title cards like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, like it was supposed to be one insane week in Superman's life. That to me might have explained the amount of stuff that was happening a little bit more, because there's so many characters all the time. Every 10 to 15 minutes new things are happening. Some of the characters are just like there in the background kind of doing stuff, and some of the thematic stuff, because of that, because it is so many things happening, I think doesn't quite come together in a way that really makes sense for me. But I think people are going to have fun at the movie. It's definitely, it's fun. The action, thank God, is like clear, which I know is like bare minimum, but there are so many movies that are just quick cutting around the action to mask stuff that it is a relief to see the way James Gunn directs action, where he's like, I'm going to keep the camera on the entire time. And yes, there's digital stitching. We all know that, but you're going to see exactly what this character is doing. And that's so much cooler. It's so much more fun.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that's my broad overview.
Yeah, that's good. I think that's good.
Yes. I'll also say I have a slightly longer review that I put up on the comicbookclublive.com website. That was, not to give too much of a backstory, but the screening was at noon today and the review embargo was at 3 p.m. So I got out of a theater at 34th Street and sat on the sidewalk outside Madison Square Garden and wrote it to get it up for 3 p.m.
Wow. You're a real Clark Kent.
I am. I call my boss and everything with my little paper and my hat.
Yeah, your paper hat. Yeah,
my paper hat. That's what I meant. Anyway, there you go. So if there's any spelling errors in the review, that's why.
No.
Let's see. Schoikler says, favorite Trek series? Great one.
I mean, if you mean the TV series, I think we got to go Next Generation.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, I think Next Gen.
I mean, it's hard to beat it.
Here's my very divisive, nobody agrees with it. I think the first season of Discovery is fantastic. I love the first season of Discovery.
It is good as well, and it captures a lot of that Next Generation energy, which I think is what they were aiming at, especially in that first season. And then it gets very insane. But yeah, I think they did nail it.
And I'll also say that I really loved Lower Decks by the end as well. Like, I also, it's not quite Next Gen level, but like, that was a great ending. It was very funny, very good show. I wish there was more of that.
Pete Patron in the comments says DS9, and there are a lot of DS9 heads out there. And I agree with that, because that's when Star Trek, I was like, I didn't know they could do sort of like Star Wars feeling. Like, that's where I feel like they really edged into another tone, which is very hard, but still capturing the Star Trek.
I got to watch that at some point, because my embarrassing thing about that show is I watched the first couple of seasons and then checked out before the Dominion War when it got really good.
Yeah, the whole thing is good.
Yeah.
Worth a watch.
Yeah, I got to watch that again. Street Bullet says, with AI becoming more and more of a divisive topic and the attitude toward it becoming more and more negative, does that make Data from Star Trek suck even more?
Wow. How dare you? I don't think he put a lot of people out of business.
Right. The other thing,
one commander who would have had his spot is who he really fucked over.
Yes. He also is actual artificial intelligence, and everything that we call AI has nothing intelligent about it. It's a predictive word algorithm that is ripped
off. It's a plagiarism machine, is what
exactly.
We call it.
So, not real. So thank you for your question. Sorry for taking it seriously.
Stray Bullet is on one tonight.
Easy Reader says, how is your fourth, guys?
Great. I'm still out in the woods celebrating it. A friend of the show, John Gabris, joined me up in the woods with my fam, and we have been really doing stuff.
Yeah. We, every year, if we can, we go to Coney Island. So we went to Coney Island this year. We go early in the morning before it gets super packed. So we went to the aquarium, which was fun. And then we walked over to Luna Park, which is the theme park. Rode a couple of rides while I was there. They were doing a skywriting Fantastic Four for, which was
cool.
Cute.
That is cool.
It was a little unclear because there was no branding or anything. It was just... they started creating it, and I was like, four for July 4th? Is that what we're doing? Oh, no, that's
makes a
fantastic
sense. Four. Yeah. Might have been Johnny Storm himself.
Probably. Just want to comment on this. Alex already said it was overstuffed because he doesn't like Superman. Not true. Overstuffed potato is delicious. Like, you got to have an overstuffed potato. So
overstuffed Oreos is like one of Alex's main staples.
Oh, my God. More cream. I wish it was all cream. Honestly, get rid of the cookie, you know?
Wow.
Nat Townsend says, how can I avoid Superman spoilers for 10 days while traveling? You
nope.
can't.
Sorry.
Yeah, sorry.
You just heard some.
Yep. I will say that this is not quite as much of like a, oh shit, crazy spoilers movie. Like, there's a couple of things in there, but there's nothing like, I don't know. There's nothing that I feel like if you got spoiled on for the movie that would actually hurt the movie in any particular way.
Yeah, it's not... he sees dead people level.
Right.
Like, it's not like you can be spoiled in that way. And I'm not even going to spoil that movie.
Yeah. Frigiga Rosa says, are we getting a Fantastic Four team draft? Don't know if it could work with only four. I will say we have talked about that.
I think that's a hell yeah.
Yeah.
We'll find a way to make it weird.
Yes. I think the main thing is we time, but we will figure out what we can do.
Yes.
Nat says, who would you have hired to create the Fantastic Four posters? You could say Alex Ross, but no one is going to be impressed if you do. Okay, so this is something that we will be talking about on the stack, I'll mention, but we were talking about in our Comic Book Club Discord, which if you're a Patreon supporter, you can get access to. There's a great article, I thought, on the Comics Beat where Heidi McDonald was talking about how the Fantastic Four posters have been going for this retro future thing, but not quite hitting it. And one of the points she was hitting over and over in the article was like, you could have just gotten Alex Ross to do it. And like, he's doing the covers for Fantastic Four, or was doing the covers for Fantastic Four. So I think that makes a lot of sense. And Nat Townsend, and this is crazy, posted in Discord. And this is a quote, I'm reading it right now from Nat. I am a better artist than Alex Ross. It's crazy that Nat said that.
He says that a lot. He says it on stage when he's doing stand-up. He was on Fallon, famously, doing stand-up. Mm-hmm. He mentioned it there. It's sort of like a catchphrase for him.
Yeah.
I'm better than Ross.
Yeah. He also says, and this makes a lot of sense, Mark Twain can champ my nards.
Yeah. He says champ, which I thought.
He says
champ
my nards.
He can champ my nards. I don't know if that's a New Yorker thing or something.
I guess. Like, he's doing some sort of accent, and I'm not sure what the accent is. It's very weird. Yeah.
It is very strange, but that's him for you. What about, let's get in, if Alex Ross is a no-go, let's bring some other comic book painters, like the Hildebrandt brothers, who did the Marvel Masterworks cards.
Frank Frazetta's ghost?
Come on!
Yeah, I think the main thing is that, like, I don't know, this is... I would have loved if he got this job. He probably would not do it, but not have gotten to do it. But my friend Stefan, who I used to be in a comedy group with, he was very into like retro things all the time and creating like old travel posters or things that look like old Disney posters. I feel like that's the aesthetic that they should have been going for and were not with these posters, because they look like modern paintings is what's going on.
Yeah. But there's an easy way. Sorry, we're doing a boudoir shoot here at the same time. The sun is coming in. I feel insane right now. I look like, what was the image character who had the soldier who has the stripe down his from the 90s?
Oh, I don't
That's
know.
Who I am, who keeps dying or whatever. Anyway, I agree. It's the kind of thing where the whole movie is retro. So, and this is our first introduction to it. They should have really nailed it.
Yeah.
And it's also something that would be hard unless you actually put the time in. Mm-hmm. And they're overstuffed.
There's somebody, there's artists that do this all the time, like are just posting stuff on Etsy or DeviantArt or literally wherever else. They could have found somebody to do it. So,
definitely.
Michael Tillman says, this might be a week in geek question, but what's the next franchise watch through, Alex? You did Final Destination, The Conjuring, and now I will say I started watching the Insidious movies next to follow up Conjuring. Not good. Those are not good. I watched the first two.
You're
going
to be
like,
disappointed in a lot of ways going forward if this is the tack you're taking.
No, I watched the first two. I watched the first one. I was like, I don't love this. All right, let me check out the second one. And I was like, I don't love this even more. I'm not going to continue with the next three. So I switched over to a bunch of TV screeners instead.
What about Bond? Have you done Bond lately? That's a long project.
No, I haven't watched that. Yeah.
I mean, that's leading up. There's going to be news about that coming always.
There was something else. Oh, Mr. Robot ended up on Netflix, and I was about like halfway through season two on a rewatch when it was on Prime Video before they took it off. So I might just pick that up again. We'll see.
There you go. You love that show.
Speaking of Prime Music says, I have a 10-hour drive coming up in a few weeks. What podcast series from Comic Book Club makes the best long-distance drive listen?
Great question. This may be hard to do on the drive unless you've watched the show recently, but the Watchmen Watch podcast we did is really, this is literally boasting about our own work, but it's definitely one of the best podcasts we've done. We had guests on, we got to dive deep into the stories, the comic and the show sort of all at the same time. It was really great.
Yeah, I agree. That was the one I was going to call out too, because it's beyond what you said. It's finite. Like, I think we covered everything pretty much. Or at least in terms of the comic and the TV show, and went very in depth about it. We didn't watch Tales of the Black Freighter, or I don't even think we talked about the Watchmen movie. Maybe we did.
I think we did. Yeah. I think we did.
Yeah. Well, anyway, there you go. Straight Bullet says, has Alex added to his nerd wall lately? Is that a new Magneto? It is not. It's been there for a while, but maybe my table is in a different place.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, pretty cool. Cool behind the scenes, right?
You've been doing some sleep arranging? Rearranging? Mm-hmm.
Maybe. Do we have anything? Ooh, here we go. Frederica Rosa says, talking about Bond, any thoughts on the next director? That's Denis Villeneuve.
Denis. I'm in. I think that's great. I mean, a lot of people are mad because it's going to take Denis out of the rest of the filmmaking game for a while, because he's doing Dune 3 now. ostensibly, then probably jumping right into at least the first Bond. So he's locked up for probably 4 to 5 years doing those two movies. But I say those are probably going to be awesome. And if I were him, I would do the same thing. You can make smaller movies later.
What do you feel about the pushback from people who are like, stop getting top tier directors on the Bond stuff? These are supposed to be cheesy and bad.
That's insane. What? Make the movies worse? Yeah, I mean, just because there were some bad ones doesn't mean we need to make them all bad.
Yeah. We got a couple of suggestions of other stuff. Derek Maynard says, don't you have a 24/7 YouTube channel? We do indeed. Don't recommend that while driving, I'll just say. I guess you can just listen to it, but there you go. Frederica Rosa says, the Sweet Tooth one, getting all the candies for the trip would be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a crazy mix of candies. One of the candies is just straight maple syrup. So,
if you're driving up to Vermont,
you can
get it from the tap, suck it right out of the tree. And that's it for your audience questions.
Whoop.
Now, because Pete is not here, unfortunately, we don't have trivia, but we can still talk about what we're looking forward to that's coming out tomorrow. Justin?
We have, quick late period recommendation from Schoikler, Mission to Zix. That's a little applicable because it's Star Wars related podcast that I'm on. I play old Durf in the show Mission to Zix. Great podcast. Not related to us, really, except for I was in it sometimes.
Yeah.
But it is a good listen. We're looking forward to, first off, Rite of Spring. Beneath the Trees, Where Nobody Sees, Rite of Spring, number one. We've already talked about it, maybe too much, but truly that's a big wreck. I would also say the Fantastic Four number one comic that is the reboot of the Ryan North series is interesting to me. It looks like it's changed up at least a little bit, hopefully for the positive. But looking forward to that. And Uncanny Valley number 10 comes out, bringing the series to a close. Really like that series. The art is fantastic.
A bunch of good titles coming out tomorrow. I'm very curious to check out Fantastic Four First Steps number 1, which is a in-universe comic from Matt Fraction and Mark Buckingham, telling the origin of the movie team. So that should be interesting. Also, Trinity, Daughter of Wonder Woman from Tom King and Belena Ortega. Just really enjoy those backups.
Yeah.
Really enjoyed that book so far. So excited to check that out. I know a bunch of folks in our Discord are super hyped for Archie Meets Jay and Silent Bob number 1 is coming out tomorrow.
Yeah.
So curious to see what happens there. And I'll also, let me just give a shout out to The Power Fantasy number 10 from Kieran Gillen and Casper Wingard. Just one of the best books on the stand and one of the best looking books on the stand, as well as being trippy and mind-blowing every issue. And every one of those books are going to be in our Stack podcast that posts Wednesday at 9 a.m., both in the Stack feed at the Comic Book Club feed, so check that out. There you go. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. Well, one person we want to thank, Heather Antos, for coming on the show. Check out the Star Trek stuff and the IDW Dark stuff from IDW. Next week on the show, SJ Word Burglar is going to be here to talk about Word Burglar Rhymes with Comics. Also, Comic Book Club News, our comic daily news podcast. You can check that out Monday through Friday. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We just wrapped up talking about Ironheart. You should also check out Sons of a Gun. That presumably should be coming out soon to talk about Superman later this week.
Very soon.
So check that out. Patreon.com/comicbookclub to support this show and all the shows we do. You can subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or the app of your choice. ComicBookClubLive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Good night, folks.
our sister, I'm going to bring forward and yours and give it to you now. And he said, oh, wow, that's great. Thank you. That's so generous of you, Carl. That's great. But his wife, my sister-in-law, went ballistic. She said, this is too much money. This is wrong. I don't want anything to do with it, and stormed out of the room. And I thought, well, that's not what I expected. Oh, my God. So I realized from that that this was not an easy thing to do. So I learned a lesson from that, and I knew that I had to do this authentically. I had to do it right. Otherwise, it was not going to work. So that happened. And then the third thing that happened was that I was looking at my financial statements, and I had more money there than I was really using. It was sitting there. I mean, it was growing, making profits and so forth, but it wasn't being used. I wasn't using it for me. I wasn't using it for things that I really cared about, not for my people. So I thought, well, if I have all this money now, why should I wait until I die? Why don't I bring it forward? And then, you know, it was a long process for me to come around to that, but that's what finally started this. And I said, well, I'll do it now.
Let's back up just a bit. Tell us a little bit about your new book. What is The Happiness Experiment?
Well, this is a recording of the real events with real people who I decided that I would bring forward the inheritance, the money I had for them in my will, and made it a prequest. So it was a chunk of money that they were going to get while they were still young enough to enjoy it, and I was still alive to see it happening. So I saw what they were doing. So when I sat down with them, I talked about money and happiness and how one can connect. And I said, look, I'm going to bring this forward to and give it to you. But what I want from you is a plan so that you use this money. So it's really a big benefit for you. I don't want this to overwhelm you. And they said, what kind of plan? I said, I want a happiness plan. And they said, a happiness plan? What's that? So you know, nobody seems to have a happiness plan. But it's one of the most important plans you can get. And it doesn't have to be very complex. What is it that makes you happy? What values do you want to pursue? You know, what goals and dreams do you have? And you can pursue them. And so I got them to write a happiness plan. And then when I saw the plan, I gave them all the money all at one time. And so then they took it and I watched them with their plan. I saw all their plans, what they did and how they became happier. And so, you know, that had to be written about. So, because I wanted other people to see what they did so that they too could do the same thing.
Which prequest is the most unique one you've come across?
Well, it was a very, very painful and sad story because two dear friends of mine had a beloved daughter and she was hit head on by a drunk driver and killed. She happened to be 8 months pregnant at the time, so that killed the granddaughter too, and also their daughter. They were totally, totally wiped out, devastated, and they died emotionally. They had decided that they could never be happy again, that it would be wrong to be happy. They didn't deserve to be happy because their darling daughter had been killed. Tremendously painful, awful, awful story. So they were grieving 6 years later. And I met with them and I told them how much they had added to my life and how much I was so grateful to them and that I wanted to express the gratitude. And I put them in my will and they could accept that. And I said, but I want you to have it now. And they said, oh, no, we can't accept it. They turned it down. They turned it down. Well, we worked on. I said, look, I'm leaving it open. So several months later, I think his wife persuaded him to do it, actually, you know. And, you know, so they said, okay, we'll do it because if we're going to wait until you die, why not do it now? And they did it. And it wasn't the money, interestingly enough. They said it was the coaching that made the big difference. That changed their mind, their mindset from being so negative, you know, we'll never be happy again. We don't deserve to be happy. And the coach turned their thinking, their mindset around and said, look, you know, it can be, you can be happy again. And they started to get the mindset of happy people. And now you cannot believe what these people, they're traveling all over the world. They're in Tahiti right now. They climbed Kilimanjaro. These people are loving life. And it was a major change. That is one of the most heartfelt, wonderful results of the and in a sense, she said, the wife said, this prequest changed, saved my life. Because we were no longer living, we were dead. And this brought us back to life.
Yeah, I mean, dealing with grief, and many of us have, I have, you know, when you're in those depths, it's really, it can be really difficult to find your way out of it. And, you know, often it looks like there isn't a way out of it. And, you know, sometimes you want a map, right? And it looks like this concept could be a good map for you if you're that. It sounds like it was for these folks. I always like to end interviews by asking, is there anything that I didn't ask that I should have?
How can my listeners benefit from this book? What should they do? What would be good for them? And so I'll answer that question. First off, think about happiness. Think about being happiness. Do you deserve to be happy? And you can be happy, but you have to make it as a choice. I'm going to increase my happiness. Just that, if you make that realistically, I want to and I'm going to increase my happiness, that choice. And then talk to people about it. Talk to a husband or wife or a girlfriend or a friend, a therapist or coach. Talk to somebody about it and say, look, I made the decision that I want to be happier and I'd like you to help me create a happiness plan. And then work on it. And it's not that hard, but it is challenging. But it's a wonderful exercise. And if they do it, I guarantee they will increase their happiness. I guarantee it.
Carl Barney is the author, and the book is called The Happiness Experiment, A Revolutionary Way to Increase Happiness. Carl, where can people find the book?
Wherever books are sold, and it's now available for pre-order from Amazon. And they can go to thehappinessexperiment.com, and they can pre-order it there, and I hope they will.
Carl, thanks so much for the time. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you, Dan. It's been fun.
Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. At ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.